This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everybody. Pete Caliendo. Hey, we're back on Facebook Live. That was a quick turnaround, man. We love to do these shows, and we're excited about this particular show because, you know, we always bring you something interesting, and we brought you a couple guys that we thought, you know, a couple days ago that thought we should make movies out of, you know, out of their stories. Well, how about this one? One of the first born Russians to play in the major leagues. Okay, doesn't get any better than that, I don't think. Born in Leningrad. Hey, it's Victor Cole. 14th round pick with the Kansas City Royals. He also was a pitching coach at Collierville High School in Tennessee near Nashville. Played in Korea, Taiwan. I mean, he's got a lot of international experience, got big league experience, obviously, as a pitcher. And he is now the manager of the Russian national team. He's been the manager. It's going to be a lot of fun talking to him. The senior team that competes in not only the European Championships, but tries to get to the Olympics. This is going to be a lot of fun. So let's welcome right away Victor Cole. What's up, Victor?
Hey, what's up, Pete? Great to be here with you.
Yeah, I almost called you Alex Cole. I don't know why, but I didn't. I didn't make that mistake.
We actually played together in 92.
Yeah, I'm sure you played with Alex Cole, right?
I sure did for a little while in Pittsburgh, yes.
Right now, you're sitting in Moscow. If it wasn't for the great, great technology that we have here and around the world, man, we wouldn't be able to do these things. This is fantastic.
Yeah, this is unbelievable. We didn't have this back when I was coming up in the 80s and 90s. No way.
I got to tell you, I hope that our young kids, because they're used to the technology, I hope they're not spending now more time on the internet, because that's not even good also. They need to get off the internet. And I want to get into that with you because, first of all, I want to thank you for being on the show. But second of all, also, you know, you're inside, but as a manager and a leader, you've got to stay sharp. I know you know, I got a chance to meet you for the very first time with our, and I want to thank the Russian Baseball Federation, you know, for the international sports group we've done the last couple of years. We've done a coaching seminar there. Our good friend, Dmitry Kislev, the president of the federation, give him a wave and everything. Thank you very much. He's been fantastic. So we've been lucky, and that's how we met you. So now, as you're there, what are you doing to keep yourself sharp? Because things could be opening up anytime, even in Russia.
Yeah, we got to keep moving here. We go outside, walk, jog around, whatever we can, do push-ups. Guys are getting real creative at home with their workouts. They're all posting videos online about what they're doing. Some guys lifting weights with 5-liter water bottles, doing bands in the house, doing all kinds of body weight exercises. So it's kind of fun watching what the guys are up to. They're getting creative and kind of creating their own little things. So we have fun with it.
So what's your recommendation to a lot of the kids in the U.S. and around the world that are in the house? I mean, you just mentioned a few things. Is there anything else that they could be doing? Now, some are lucky they can get in the yard because the weather's good. In Chicago, it just snowed yesterday, so we don't have we're not that lucky. So what do you think? What else can you do?
Yeah, the guys that can get outside, obviously, you play catch, play wiffle ball, do anything outside where you're doing baseball activities. If you're stuck inside, you know, throw the ball against the wall, work on hand-eye coordination, that sort of thing. Obviously, you can't really throw too much, but you could at least keep your body in shape, because where we were before we got shut down, everyone was pretty high level of game shape. We were game ready. We're throwing live BP. Guys are hitting live. So we were almost ready to go. So now if we got to take a step back for about a month or so, really, if you just keep your body in shape, it won't take very long to get back in the swing of things.
All right. That's great advice. And listen, here's what I want to start with, because I know what people are thinking, even on Facebook Live. If you got any questions, type them up at the bottom. But we're going to start off just with a little bit of history, because, you know, people are thinking Victor Cole, Russia, this isn't, you know, doesn't jive right now. Let's give that history. Born in Russia. Why? I saw a little bit on Wikipedia. Interesting story.
All right. Well, here's how it goes. My father was coming to Russia from Africa to study. And he met my mother at university, and they got married, and then he went to medical school, and I was born 4 years later. And then we stayed here for another 4 years while he was finishing medical school. And then we moved back to Africa for 4 years and then to Canada for 2 years. And then we finally made our way to the States when I was 10. And we got to Columbus, Ohio when I was 10 years old. And that's where I first picked up a baseball and fell in love with the game.
Wow. And then you went, you know, throughout your career, obviously, you know, the minors, the big leagues, you know, your pitching coach at a high school. How does that come all the way around to Russia now? You went from the Soviet Union, now you're back in the Russia.
Well, at the end of, when I tell you, I'll put it this way. When I got to the big leagues, obviously they were making a big deal out of me being a firstborn Russian. So a gentleman by the name of Bob Protexter was working with a few Russians in the minor leagues with the Angels at the time, trying to get them acclimated to minor league baseball and all that. And so they organized a phone call with me while I was in Pittsburgh on a phone interview on a radio show with the two Russian guys that were with the Angels. And one of them is now one of the managers for one of the local teams. So he put us on the phone together as they were asking questions and we were talking to each other. They were speaking in Russian and I was answering back in English because my Russian was a little rusty at the time. So we got to know each other and kind of break the ice at that time. That was back in 92. And Bob and I kept in touch over the years as he was communicating and helping the Russian baseball program get off the ground and get going. And then when I retired in 2003, it just so happened that the Russian national team was in the Northeast playing in Massachusetts and New Jersey. And they asked me if I'd like to come along and play. And I was still in shape because I was still waiting for the phone to ring. I was only 34 at the time. So, you know, when you're waiting for that phone to ring, you're still working out. You're still throwing bullpens and all that. So I was pretty much just ready to go. And they called me up and said, hey, why don't you meet us up here? We're playing some independent league teams. And so I got a chance to meet up with them for about a week up there. And we played the Brockton Rocks and played the New Jersey Jackals, I believe it was, up there. So I got a chance to pitch a game with them and travel around with them for about a week. Got to know all the guys. We had a great time. And we said we'd keep in touch. But the problem was at that time, it was really tough getting to be a part of their organization as a player, because the rules at the time for the Russians were you had to denounce your American citizenship in order to get Russian citizenship. And you had to have Russian citizenship in order to play for the Russian national team in international events. So it was really, really strict rules that they had at the time. So we could never get that to work out just right. So the years went by. We tried again in 2007 for the European Championships, but they still wouldn't budge on the rules. So we just kept in touch. And then finally, this last January, I get a phone call. And it was from Bob Protexter again. He said, hey, Vic, what are you doing? I said, well, I'm coaching high school right now. And he's like, hey, we need a coach in Russia. And I said, okay, let's talk. So they had spring training at the Canary Islands. And my son and I flew out there for about a week. He stayed for the full 10 days and got a chance to meet the guys, a great bunch of guys, great coaching staff. We all gelled really well, got along great. And we still get along great today. And both my son and I love it here, and we've been together ever since.
Oh, that's awesome. That's fantastic. And now you're the manager. Give us an idea. What's the goal here? Obviously, it's to develop the team and all that in the national team. But what's the goal? I know what's great about Dmitry, and I want to give a shout-out to Bob Protexter, great guy. Dmitry, being the Federation president, is very organized, and they've got a long-range goal. You know, we've sat with him and talked to him about it. It's not a 2-year goal. You know, it's a 10-year goal. So tell us a little bit about that and the direction you're trying to take the Russian national team.
The first goal is to win the Group B European Championships. We've got the championships being held here in Moscow. We got moved from July to September. So we'll be hosting that at Roostar Arena, which is one of the nicest complexes, and you've seen it, one of the nicest complexes in Europe.
It's pretty good compared to anywhere in the world, too.
Yeah. So we get to host that this fall. So if we win that, then we automatically go up to Group A, where all the big who all the big guys are in Europe, with the Netherlands, Italy, Israel, Germany, Czech Republic, Spain, all those teams. That's where our short-term goal is. We got to get in that group. And once we get there, we're going to obviously try to climb our way up the rankings so we can compete against the Asian teams and some of the American teams, which are very strong. You know, you got Mexico, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, the USA, Canada. They're all strong teams. So if we can get to that level where we can compete with them, that gives us a shot at making the Olympics, which is our long-term goals, is to get to the 2028 Olympics in L.A.
2028. All right. And, you know, I'm going to go back a little bit because when I was the Belgium national team coach, I played against the Russians, that time the Soviet Union. Also, then they came in 99 and toured in the Northern League prior to what you were talking about, the Northeast League. Three players had signed out of that tour when they played us in Schaumburg. There was a pitcher, a catcher, and a shortstop. I go back to it because at that time, the Soviet Union was one of the fastest developing European countries in the shortest period of time when it comes to baseball. And I think they took the old Soviet Union, you know, training where they took players from all over the country. You know, I mean, everybody knows about it, the hockey system they had and all that. I thought it was very interesting. I'll tell you one quick story, and I know this has changed a little bit. You know, I remember playing the European Championships, being Belgium. A guy got thrown out third base. I think I told you the story. You know, and this is a senior team, and the player stood up, and the coach said something, and next thing you know, he whacked him on the side of the head. You know, and the guy just didn't say a word and ran right in. I mean, tough disciplinarians at that time. From Soviet Union to now, I still feel you guys are really going in the right direction. You're really getting started good. I know it's almost like a restart in some ways. Give us a comparison. What do you think about all that? I know you don't have the selection of the players that you used to have, but the direction and all that seems pretty good.
Yeah, the coaching and the leadership is I think it's improved a lot. Obviously, there's a lot more information that's out there that's easily accessible through YouTube and Instagram and all that. And the guys are constantly on there trying to learn, trying to get better. They go to the ABCA conventions in the States. I think they went to one in Indianapolis a few years back. So they're always trying to get more information to get to the guys. They're top of the line equipment and technology for the guys. So the information is there. I think where we're getting to now is with we've got some help from some Cuban players. So we're having access to high level baseball players on the field every day, and they're getting a chance to watch them hit. They're watching them field. They're watching them pitch. So their game is evolving along with, you know, being alongside the Cubans, and it's evolving constantly now at a faster rate because we're getting the information. Plus, they got the guys on the field with them, and then with also me being here with my experience, I can tweak things here and there. So they're making really good progress now. So we're seeing big turnarounds in hitting, fielding, and pitching in 3 months with what kind of information is available to them right now.
Yeah, and what you mentioned, you know, today's world, they've got a lot of technology at their hands. They're pretty good when it comes to science and also medical stuff. So there's some advances that are going on in Russia right now. You know, Eastern Europe, and, you know, I believe, you know, and tell me about this. I believe one advantage they have, which is difficult to teach and maybe even to train with. Man, I want to get your opinion on this, especially because you played at the highest level. Their mental toughness, you know, I know it's not all of them because some, you know, at the bigger cities sometimes can be a little spoiled also. But the mental toughness that I saw in a lot of areas is really, really good.
Yeah, with some of the guys, I'm really impressed with how what their work ethic is like. I mean, they just come into the park and they just want to work and work and work. And practice will be over and they're still getting extra swings. They want extra ground balls. They want to do some extra running, some extra lifting. Our hardest task as coaches, we got to slow these guys down sometimes. We got to rein them in and say, hey, don't work so hard. We got a long, this is a marathon we're going here. It's a 10-month season. It's a 10-month season. Slow down. You don't need to get it all done in one day. So that's the hardest part is they've got such a tough work ethic that we got to rein them in sometimes. And that's tough to do when they're going full throttle all the time.
Now, you don't get, you know, you don't get to pick everybody. I mean, you get to pick your players, but it's not like in the big leagues where you got, you know, all these minor league systems and you can pick certain guys. What's the challenges there, and what are you focusing on the most? I know you don't want to give up, you know, secrets of what you're doing, but what are you focusing on the most to make sure that you're going to be successful as a team? Because ultimately, the name of the game is still you got to win.
Right. So we look at our positions and we see where we're solid at, where we're one or two deep in. If we start getting weak at a certain position, then we look down at the younger team and we locate and identify a player that we feel can come up and fill that spot. And what we do is we'll get him to come and work out with us and practice with us. So he's got the access of the practice plan that all the guys are, you know, got access to, the Cubans and the top tier Russian national team guys. And so then he'll have a chance to progress at a faster pace just because of that. So that's what we've done with a couple of infielders. We've got a couple infielders that are really young, 17, 18 years old. And we brought them up, have them work out with our guys, have them get some same kind of reps in practice, same instruction. And we've done that with a couple pitchers too, they're real young. May not see a lot of action this year in the championships, but in the next years to come, they'll probably be frontline guys. So that's what we do. We handpick a couple of guys in each position that could help us in the future.
As a manager and leader, what's your biggest challenge in working with the national team?
Is to keep them on task with what our goals are. Everyone wants to. The biggest thing with our guys here, as I see, they have so much access to Major League Baseball. And I understand that because that's how I learned how to play the game. I watched games on TV and I wanted to be like Jim Rice or Nolan Ryan or Carl Yastrzemski or Rod Carew. You know, I had my guys that I wanted to play like, so I emulated them. These guys, they get to see the same thing. They're inundated with YouTube videos, Instagram videos, workout programs and all that. And they all want to play at that major league level. And so everything they do is geared to, I want to play in the big leagues. I want to play in the big leagues. But a lot of times you've got to take it in steps. You can't expect to play like a major league shortstop in 1 year. You've got to play like a high school shortstop and then a college level shortstop and then maybe a minor league level shortstop. And then 3-4 years down the road, you might develop the tools to play at that high level. So they're in such a hurry to get there and they're so driven to get there that sometimes you've got to make sure they don't miss the intermediate steps because you can't just make, there's no shortcut to get into the big leagues or to get that kind of level. It takes a step at a time. And you have to learn the mental part of it as well as the physical part in order to get there. And you can't leapfrog any of them because if you try to take a shortcut, you're going to have a weakness somewhere else in one of the steps that you missed.
Well said. Hey, folks, on Facebook Live, if you want to type something in the comment section, some questions for Victor about baseball development, you know, they're very lucky, obviously, to have you because of the fact, like you said, you play in the big leagues, so they can, you know, you can explain to them some of these things that's a little bit more believable. Now, I've been lucky to watch the last couple of years. I love what you said about, you know, when you got a couple of players at two different positions, how they kind of, the Russians look at how the shortstop's doing it, and all of a sudden they start doing it, emulating some of those things. I got to see that firsthand. I really believe in that. That's kind of like your freshmen's working out with your seniors in high school, right? Now, as a big league pitcher, I've also seen some pretty good guys that throw pretty good there. I'm going to talk about 92, 94, you know, some 95. What stops some of these guys? Because some have been signed and released. What stops some of these guys from getting to the higher levels? Not maybe the big leagues, but even the big leagues. What stops them, you think?
Well, without going through each one and saying, you know, what their names are and all that. But it's mostly secondary stuff that I see. It's a lack of secondary stuff because we've got guys that can run it up there, like you said, 94, 95 miles an hour in the low 90s, upper 80s. We've got guys who can pitch in pro ball right now, but it's every stage of the minor leagues, from what I experienced coming through the systems, there's a different level of technique, of professional technique that you've got to have as a pitcher. So in A ball, you've got to have off speed stuff to get the guys, because everyone can hit fastballs in A ball. Mm-hmm. All right. So you've got to be able to get guys out with off speed stuff. Otherwise, you're going to get crushed in A ball. To get in Double A, it changes, because now those guys can hit everything. Those are the future major leaguers. All right. So those are all first round picks, big bonus guys from international ball and all that. So those guys can hit off speed. They can hit fastballs. They can hit everything. So there, you got to start turning into a pitcher. You got to start locating fastballs. You've got to throw off speed and fastball counts. You've got to be able to locate fastballs with two strikes, things like that. You got to start becoming like a major league pitcher. And then you get to AAA, and you've got a hodgepodge of everything. You've got veterans coming down from the big leagues. You've got young guys, young phenoms coming up fast through the system. You've got 4A guys who could play in the big leagues, but just aren't just waiting for that break. So you've got a real mix of abilities in AAA. So you've got to be able to change as a pitcher. You've got to be able to adjust your game on the fly every game in certain situations, because you might be facing a 35-year-old veteran guy who maybe loves to hit breaking balls. Then you got a young Dominican guy who can hit any fastball between 90 and 105. So you've got to be able to adjust during the lineup and during the game to do that. So all those different levels require different levels of expertise as a pitcher. And what I saw was lacking from the guys that didn't make it with the Russians, that they didn't have that secondary stuff that they could throw two-one counts, 3-1 counts, and also 3-2 counts, because you can't just throw a fastball 3-2, you'll get killed. You got to be able to throw a slider, on the outside corner. You got to be able to throw a changeup at the knees, things like that, which major league pitchers can do.
Folks, you're listening and watching Victor Cole, manager of the Russian national team, the senior team, and also former major league, big league pitcher. One of the things, you guys got an incredible complex. You're very fortunate, obviously. AstroTurf, cages, I'm not going to get into all of the classrooms, and some players live there and all that. And you do a lot of training in that place. And you and I talked about this. Even in the States, sometimes you can get a little bit too comfortable because, you got the turf, the easy bounces, there's no bad hops. There's certain things. How do you adjust to get them prepared for the real situation? Because you're not going to be playing on AstroTurf at the European Championships, at least not all the time.
Yeah, last year, that's what our challenge was last year. We played in Bulgaria and in Czech Republic after leaving here. But the good thing is all the games just aren't played at the AstroTurf facility. There's four other sites around the country, around the city, where we play. So they actually have to play some games on rougher infields that have the bad hops and have the rocks in the infield, things like that. So there is a balance there. So they do get to experience that there is here as well. So, but as far as the training, yeah, we do get spoiled with the training, because we get a lot of sure hops on the AstroTurf and all that. But once we start play here in a month or two, we'll be playing half our games on sites where they're less than high school level for what we're used to in the States.
The other challenge, and you see it in Europe a lot, and you hear it a lot, and I'm going to get your advice on this. And what you do to counter this, counterbalance the challenge a little bit here. And that is, a lot of European countries, they don't see guys throwing 94, 95 all the time. There maybe be 87, 86, 89. Also now, boom, they got to face those guys. What's some of the things? I know you have the pitchers that can throw against your guys, but they can't throw all day against them. What are some of the things you do to get them to adapt to that, so they're prepared for that situation against those other teams that you're talking about, the Italians, the Dutch, and some of these that throw a lot harder, the Czechs and so forth?
So we've got two ex-pitchers that are our coaching staff, myself and Anton Shiroki. He's been pitching for years here. He's got about maybe over 10 years of pitching experience. He played for the national teams when he was younger. So both of us we've got pretty decent stuff. So what we'll do is we'll move during BP, we'll move the mound up to maybe 50 feet, whatever distance we have to be able to simulate whatever speed that we're going to be facing. So if we're going to be facing 92, 93, then we'll look at our calculator and see, okay, I'm throwing 80. Okay, how far away do I have to be to simulate a 93-mile-an-hour fastball, and that might be 50 feet, or it might be 52 feet. So we'll just adjust the mound back or forward in order to get to that that sweet spot, and then we'll throw BP from there. And so that's how we adjust for the speed. And also we'll check video and see what the pitchers throw, and what is successful or what their pitchers are going to be pitching like. Are they going to throw sliders? Are they going to be throwing curveballs, sinkers, whatnot? And then we'll try to duplicate that as much as best as we can during BP to kind of help the guys get ready.
And Victor, times are changing. You know, I'm sure it's all over the world. You know, a lot of times, even maybe in your situation, but I know the younger levels, you know, they don't have enough players. So you might only have one third baseman, or you might have another one second baseman. And that third baseman maybe doesn't run out of ball, you know, and he's not hustling. You know, to discipline players, that balance, how do you deal with that? Because that can't be easy. It's a lot easier when you got two guys that are pretty good and the next guy's going to play.
Yeah, in a situation like that, you got to have your priorities in other areas. I guess if you want to have guys play disciplined and not hustle and all that, it's up to us as coaches to tell them the importance of doing that. But again, as you see in the major leagues, guys don't hustle out every ball because they're trying to save themselves for the end of the season. Sure. So if you watch major league games, guys, they Cadillac it a little bit more than they do maybe in the minors. The guys in the minors are hungry. They're trying to get up. They're trying to get noticed. They're trying to get that phone call so they can get up to the big leagues. So yeah, they're giving it 110% to try to get out of there, get off the buses, get out of the cheap motels. So, but the guys in the big leagues, hey, they've got the big salaries. They got to stay healthy, and they got to stay the pressures for them to perform 162 games out of the season, and it's a long grind. So they have to conserve their energy as they get through the season, and so it's we've got to look at our guys the same way. We're like, hey, we don't have a deep bench that we can go to. So maybe discipline is not higher on our priority list. We have to tell guys, hey, look, all we care about maybe is how you perform on the field. As long as it doesn't affect your defense or your production at the plate, you know, maybe we'll look the other way, you know, here or there for as far as hustling the ball out, this or that, because we don't have the luxury of saying, all right, you know, you don't hustle the ball out, we're putting somebody else in for you. And that's where we're at. So as coaches, we've really got, it's really important for us to take stock in what we've got, what we're dealing with, and keep our focus on our priorities. What's important.
What's your recommendation to coaches, you know, when you run in a practice, especially as you get closer to that competition, what's a Victor Cole practice look like to get them prepared? Some advice, you know, it's just tips that can help them prepare for the actual games, because a lot of times we just kind of go through practice and go through the motions.
You got to go through game speed situations. So the hitters got to be facing like game speed type pitching. Like what I was saying before, we got to simulate game speed. If we're going to be seeing 90, well, BP's got to be at 90. If we're going to be seeing sliders in the games, we got to see good sliders in BP. Not 50 mile an hour tosses up there and have home run hitting contests. That's not what we're trying to do. Same thing with infield. Hey, we might get runners on and take infield with runners to try to speed up the game a little bit there. For the outfielders, we'll put a runner on second base and get a base hit to the outfield. Hey, throw them out at home, you know, something like that to kind of speed them up a little bit. And obviously with the pitchers, we have live BP. So we'll have live BP and we may have different situations there or whatnot. But you can get really creative with a live BP with situations and all that, runners on base counts and all that kind of situation there. So that's a good way for the pitchers to get that live type of action.
What's BP look for like in some of your situations before a ball game? Is it your typical BP, or is there anything different to help them prepare for that game?
Usually right before a game, we don't have a whole lot of time. It also depends on the structure of that tournament. So some tournaments, they won't allow you to take BP at all. Some say you get 20 minutes of it in one little cage. So if it's in a small cage, you know, then it's just like, hey, let's get 10 swings, get out, because we got, 15, 16 guys to run through. So it can't be anything long. It's just, hey, get your swings and get loose, you know, go the other way, let the ball get deep and all that kind of stuff, just to groove your swing a little bit. That's about the best you can do in a situation like that. When you've got more time, obviously you can do more things. You can go right field, you go up the middle, you can You can do situations. Hey, man, on third base, get him in, all that kind of stuff. So it just depends on what our situation is, how much time we've got.
Absolutely. And as a major league pitcher, and, you know, I know most coaches understand simply if you don't have the pitching, you're going to be playing catch-up ball. With your pitchers, since it's really the name of the game, you probably spend a lot of time with your pitchers. How do you, when it comes to the game itself, give us an idea how you kind of organize your pitching staff, whether it be, you know, who's the starter and your game plan kind of situation?
Depends on the tournament that we're in. And also if we've got back-to-back tournaments and which one has the most importance. So we got to put the whole picture together and see what's our goal, what we're trying to accomplish, which tournament we want to win, you know, all that kind of thing. So obviously you want to have it where your best pitcher can be available for the championship game or the game to get into the championship if you have to use them at that point. So a lot of situations in a six game tournament, you like your ace to go game one and then game six, and then your number two, you know, go the game two and then maybe be in relief in game six on 3 days rest. So that's usually the plan we usually go with. Anything else, then you're starting to tax arms and guys aren't prepared to pitch in situations like that. So that's what we did in Bulgaria last year for the championships, and it worked out pretty good. We were a couple innings short from winning that thing. So it seemed to work out there, and that's probably the way we would work with it in the future.
Now, Victor, you've got some ex-minor league players that played in the States that are Russian pitchers, and, you know, one of the biggest challenges all the time is, you know, a game plan for your opponent, you know, the pitches you're going to call, when you're going to change certain things. Explain a little bit who controls all this. I know it's done in practice and then obviously carried into the game, so you have a plan, but who's controlling it all? Is the catcher, the pitcher, you, the communication?
Well, last year was my first go around with this team. So I got there in June of last year, once my season was over with the high school. So our first tournament was 3 weeks later. So I didn't have a whole lot of time to work with the pitchers and find out what their repertoires were and all that. I got a glimpse of some of them in the Canary Islands during spring training, but I hadn't seen them up to that point during the season. So, but good thing for us is our pitching staff is, I would say, an A-level, professional-level pitching staff. So the guys pretty much know what they need to throw at what times, and they're pretty confident with calling their own games. So I just pretty much watched them and just let them and the catchers call the games and just gave them the reins to say, hey, you call your own game. We'll only call something that we see that's important at that particular time or that certain hitter. And so that's basically what we did. There was maybe a couple of hitters that we had to watch out for in each team. And we'd sit down before they'd come up and say, hey, we got to give this guy, let's say, sliders on the outside corner, or this guy, we got to bust in on the hands. Don't let him get extended. Or this guy is a good fastball hitter. We got to keep changeups low and away from him. So we'd have a game plan for those guys. And that was about it. They usually stuck with it pretty good.
You know, the other aspect of all this is, you know, you're going to throw the pitch, but then your defense has got to be ready too. You know, they don't have a lot of the game experience that a lot of players might have. Some might, they came from minor league baseball, but not all the players. So how do you communicate the defensive aspect? Who's running that? Are the players making decisions? I want you to kind of give recommendations, not just how you do it in Russia with the Russian team, but what you would recommend the coaches in the U.S. and around the world, how you deal with that.
Well, obviously, there's spray charts are big in the States. We keep, even in high school, we kept spray charts on opposite teams. And if you had spray charts available, that helps a lot as far as where you place your defenders, where you move your outfielders and things like that. Sometimes you can see by a swing. If a guy's late on a swing on a certain pitcher, on a certain pitch, and you know what pitches you're going to throw, you could say, okay, we're going to shade our outfielders this way or shade them that way. Same thing with the infielders. You do the same thing with them. If you see a guy's late on a swing or he's got a quick bat and he's pulling everything. So a lot of those things you could see, coaches could see that on the fly. If you don't have a spray chart, if you don't have any scouting information on those guys, You can watch that way, or you can maybe watch them in BP and see what their tendencies are and start them off that way and then make adjustments as you get in the game. But it's really hard to lock in a defense on one particular guy, because if you have pitchers, you know, some pitchers throw 95, you got some pitchers throw 86, and then you got left-handers, you got right-handers, and then obviously you're going to have switch hitters. So you just got to be able to wing it, and you got to be able to adjust on the fly. And that's part of this great game of baseball, is that that you're always making adjustments. You're always learning something new about your opposition. And there's no one way to win a ball game. There's many ways you can win a ball game, and you can get creative with it. And you can look at the shifts that they do in Major League Baseball now. It's absolutely incredible. A guy can hit a ball 2 feet off to the right of a first baseman, and the second baseman's right there scooping it up and throwing it to first to get him out. I mean, I never saw it when I played, and now we're seeing it all the time, it looks like.
Well, with technology and analytics, man, they can tell you exactly where to stand pretty much. And 90% of the time, they're hitting the ball there. It is amazing. That's the way the game is changing. Speaking about having a repertoire doing different things throughout the game, is the bunting game still alive in Russia and in Europe?
Not so much. We didn't see much bunting in the championships last year. I think guys are just they're falling in love with the power game that they're seeing in MLB and in internationally. You got Japanese hitting more home runs. You got the South Koreans hitting home runs. But everyone's hitting home runs.
Let me ask you, Victor. But Victor Cole needs to win. And if he can't win only on home runs, is Victor Cole going to institute that bunting game a little bit? And I'm not talking about moving a guy over, you know, and give up an out. But is he going to institute this? And are you using it and you're preparing it in practice too at the same time? Because as we all know, you got to practice. You can't ask somebody to bunt if they've never done it or they're not done it enough.
Yes, absolutely. You got to work on your bunting. You got to identify who your bunters are and who can't bunt. That's, I think, even more important, because you don't want to bunt your number four guy and he can't lay a bunt down to save his life, right? So, yes. So identify who your bunters are, who can do it. And then if a situation comes up where a bunt would be perfect, let's say you got a pitcher doesn't move very well off the mound, or you got a third baseman playing back and the situation's perfect, yeah, absolutely, get one down. Matter of fact, in Bulgaria last year, we had our number nine guy lay down some great bunts that turned the game around, a couple games around for us, and really helped us big time. So, yeah, that absolutely comes in play. You always got to have all your cards, your weapons ready to go.
What's your biggest challenges as a manager during a ball game, as the game's going on? Some of the things that, man, you really got to – you know, stay awake on, because it could happen anytime or something. And I'm going to have possibly a couple questions coming from Facebook, hopefully. But what's some of your challenges during games?
Well, the biggest, obviously, is to know when the pitcher's getting tired and when to make a pitching change. And then who's the right guy to bring in the next situation. So,
well, That's tough.
That could change in a heartbeat. You know, that's, you know, you could be cruising with, you know, nobody on, nobody out, two outs, and then all of a sudden you got bases loaded, and you're looking around like, who do we get in this ball game? Who's got ice water in their veins we could put in this situation? So that's always a challenge, because all the situations change. You hit different parts of the lineups. Certain guys match up better with different parts of the lineups. So it's the key is you got to know who you got, who your guys are, what their skill set is, and how to get the most out of them. And usually when you put your guys in the right situations, usually they're going to come out on top. So as coaches, just get to know your players, get to know what's inside their heart, what keeps them going, and how to push their buttons, and how to get the most you can out of them. That's probably the best advice that I could give. And that's what I try to find out of my guys. So practice, you know, we play around a lot, get to know each other a lot. And then that way you can know, hey, what's his eyes look like when he's got, when he's stressed out, or, you know, what does he look like when he's got his game face on and he's ready to go? So that's what I like to know out of my guys.
Excellent said. Excellent. Excellent. I love it. And, you know, the one of the hardest things I think for all coaches, all managers, at any level, but especially at the younger levels, if you don't have the experience, and you said it, you got to know your guys. What, you don't have all the statistics. You don't have everything. Maybe you may have, I'm sure you have radar guns, but your calculations when taking out a pitcher, some of the things that you calculate in your mind to make that decision, what are those?
His control is first. If he's losing his control, then we obviously got to make a change, because we can't have base on balls. A lot of can't have freebies. And as you know, you miss your target by 6 inches in this game now with the level of hitting that that we're seeing. You know, that could be catastrophic. You know, that could turn into from a strikeout or a ground ball to extra base hit or a home run. The first thing is lack of control. And when he starts losing his command, that's the alarm goes off there. Some guys, they could get tired, but they still have their control. They're still ballsy enough. They could go out there and compete, even when they're a little fatigued. And so we might give them a little rope and let them go an extra inning. But usually when they start bouncing balls or missing by a foot or two, it's time for them to come out.
Great advice. Hey, well, you know, we're coming close to the end here, and a couple questions that are not necessarily, you know, from the standpoint of games or anything, but more about, you know, the development there when it comes to the grassroots level in Russia. You know, what are the Russians doing to grow the game? And I know this might be a little bit more of a question possibly for Dmitry, which, you know, I got an idea a little bit what they're doing, but to grow the game and to get young players to play it and some of the challenges.
There's a lot of teams sprouting up now. I'm seeing a lot more teams coming through the arena, especially during the off season. A lot more physical training. They're getting started with weight training and bands and medicine balls and things like that at an earlier age. They're doing more athletic stuff, more running, more complex running workouts, you know, with cones and agility type things. Mm-hmm. So I'm seeing them doing high level agility stuff, high level athletic conditioning stuff that's making them better athletes. And I'm starting to see younger players around 14 and 15 already showing muscle growth and strength on the mound as well as hitting. I'm starting to see a lot more of that now. So that's a good sign for those guys. That's what I would say to keep going, keep that up, even in the States. Get those guys in the weight room, not lifting a lot of weight, but just where they're exercising, getting their bodies a little stronger, you know, where they can handle a bat a little bit easier, where the throw is not so taxing on their shoulders and elbows and joints and things like that. And where they can run a little faster, maybe they can jump up higher and get a ball quicker. Maybe they can run faster to get a ball, things like that. Those are the things that are going to get anyone to the next level.
You know, we see the same challenge in the States and all over the world. There's no doubt about it. You know, I know people are going to send me a message and say, Pete, you're nuts, you know, and this and that. You know, baseball definitely can be a boring game. Now, we all love it, but I don't care what anybody says, baseball can be boring. And if it's boring for kids, they're going to find something else to do. And when you're comparing it against hockey, where, you know, Russia, hockey is a big sport. I'm sure soccer is a big sport. Not easy to get them attracted away from those sports. What's some suggestions possible? What's Russia doing to maybe go after players, like I said, 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, to get them to play baseball, but yet they're looking at also hockey and soccer?
Well, I think first thing is we've got to take care of our own business. We've got to do our jobs as the national team. We've got to win Group B, and we got to get to Group A. And then when we get to Group A, we've got to go there and compete. We got to compete with the big dogs. We got to compete with the top five teams there. And until we do that, we're not going to get the attention of those young guys. So what I tell our guys, I say, hey, look, if you want baseball in Russia to get better, if you want the kids to start paying attention, then they've got to have somebody to look up to. And those guys have to look up to winners. They got to look up to champions. They got to look up to people who are making a difference in Europe. And that's got to be us. So when we go out there, we can't just try to get by and have a good time. No, we got to make an imprint on European baseball. We've got to come in there, and we've got to let them know that the Russian baseball is here to stay, and that, you know, when you're playing the Russians, you're going to be in for a battle. And that's what's going to impress the young guys, and that's what's going to make them proud, and that's going to make them want to be a part of Russian baseball in the future.
Well said. Yeah, of course. And then that is the national team. If you could represent your national team, the one that's winning, that's an awesome thing. And the other advantage I think you have, too, is that you've got guys that play pro ball, so I think kids are starting to see that. That's a big advantage, I would assume. You know, at the end here, I'm going to have you say a couple things, and one thing I wanted to mention, this is a little different from the standpoint – you know, it's a challenge in Europe, and it's, you know, you have different sides on this. There's, as you mentioned, there's ability to get players who get Russian passports nationalized because they've lived there so many years or whatever the rules may be. There's a challenge between having those players on a team and then having other, let's say, other players that don't get the opportunity because these players took their spots. How do we balance that?
Well, I was lucky enough to be a part of Taiwanese baseball in 1997, and that was at a time where they started a new league, and it was called the TML, the Taiwan Major League. And they were in competition with the CPBL, which is still around now. And in order to get that league started, in order to grow that league, they had to get about 7 or 8 import players per each team. So most of the pitching staff was made up of Americans and imports. Most of the infield and outfield. So it was us carrying the load at that time. And for a few years, that's what it needed to be in order for the local players to develop. Mm-hmm. And they were playing alongside with us. They were watching us throw our bullpens. They were watching us hit BP. And so it took a couple of years. And then all of a sudden, kind of like the situation we have here, it took a couple of years. All of a sudden, a few years later, they decreased the number of imports. And then the local Taiwanese players jumped in and they started getting better. And I believe the same thing is going to happen here. In order to compete in Europe in Group A, we've got to have the Cuban guys. Without them, we're struggling against the lower tier Group A level teams. I mean, at best, we'd have a hard time with Austria without the Cubans. So we need them just to be able to break in and stay in the top five, top six, where we can start getting some attention for the national program so we can start pulling these young guys towards our sport. So I think it's a short-term thing, and in the long term, it'll be predominantly Russians. But for the short term, that's what we're going to have to survive.
You know, Victor, you've been great. I want to end it with one thing, but I do have – there's a Facebook question that – you've kind of answered, but I think maybe you can mention it. First of all, they're asking how many players, Pablo Tesoro from Argentina, how many players you have in Russia. I don't remember a number of players that are playing in Russia. If you don't have that, we can get that from Dimitri. But what are the cities they play in the most? And you mentioned what's the average speed of pitchers that they're throwing? If you can kind of address that a little bit.
Yeah, I don't have the actual number of players because I don't know what levels.
Yeah, you know, we'll – numbers.
Yeah, because they're starting they're starting them at 8-9 years old now, and so I don't know who in what cities, how many 8-9 year olds they've got there, how many 12 year olds they have, all that.
But at your national team level, your average pitcher's throwing about 89-90.
Yes, our national team, we've got 8 guys that'll see the ball and they all throw over 86-87 miles an hour up to our hardest throws 94-95.
And then you've got to travel around. So you see a lot of young players in different parts of Russia to be able to identify some of these kids?
Most of them are here in Moscow. And what we did was the guys who were from St. Petersburg or from Crimea or from other parts of Russia, they because there's no indoor facility for them to work at in the off season, they all come here to Rustar. So we get a chance to see the nation's best come here to Russia to work out at some point in time. So that's how we identify most of them.
Victor, great way to end it. Let's do this. The final thing for our coaches and managers. If just some final advice as a manager, if you're going to excel at any level as a manager, what are some of the things, and I know it could be a whole talk on this, but what are some of the things that are important that you focus on that you need to do if you're going to excel?
Get to know your players. Find a way to get the most out of each guy. And that's the hard part. Being a successful manager is not easy. It takes a lot of work. And if you take pride and being the best manager you can be, being the best leader you can be, then take the extra time to get to know each one of your guys, from the guy who's your best hitter to the guy who's the worst guy on the bench, to the best pitcher, all the way to the last guy that's going to see the ball. Get to know them, get to know what they can do, and put them in situations where they can help not only the team, but help with their confidence and become better players and keep a love for the game. That's our goal as coaches. And if we can do that, we're winners no matter what the score is.
All right. Final words of wisdom from Victor Cole, manager of the Russian national team and also former major league pitcher. Victor, outstanding show. That was fantastic. Loved it. I'm looking forward to seeing you again at our ISG coaching program. Last year, just folks, so you know, we went from 70 coaches the first year to last year, over 90 coaches from all over Russia that attended the program there in Moscow. I'm looking forward to having you as part of, you know, obviously you're the national team coach and also big league player. It's going to be exciting to have you work with the coaches during our program. We're looking forward to having you, man.
Pete, it was a pleasure, and I'd love to help out any way I can in the future with you.
All right. Hey, Victor Cole, there he is. I'm Pete Caliendo. Everybody on Facebook, want to thank you again for joining us on the show. We really appreciate it. Thank to all our listeners in the U.S. and around the world. Don't forget, this is the show that loves to interview baseball's best coaching minds who love to challenge the status quo at times. So we're going to bring you another show tomorrow. We'll be back live on Facebook, but also remember, we're going to be placed on YouTube at Peter Caliendo, placed on our podcast, the audio, baseballoutsidethebox.com. Don't forget our Twitter at Baseball Out. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. I want to wish you a safe day, whether you're in Russia, whether you're in Japan, whether in the U.S. We're all in this together with the virus. Stay in, stay safe, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.